From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It takes some level of political courage to take on Orrin Hatch. Or maybe there's some other quality that explains Pete Ashdown's run for Hatch's seat this year. Tenacity is one word that comes up from time to time, but also a decided resistance to conformity. In a profile of Ashdown in the City Weekly last year, Utahns got the image of the candidate with his now wife strolling down the streets of Roswell, New Mexico in silver robes and moon boots. While the Roswell trip was a bit of a goof, Ashdown is deadly serious about his run for Senate, and he's devoting a unique level of energy and candor to the enterprise. Today on the program, we'll begin a series of conversations with the candidates running for office this year. Pete Ashdown will join us to talk about his ideas for business, life, and his chances being a Democrat in Utah. Join us after the news. Well, there's a kind of unspoken reality if you're a Democrat running in Utah that your chances are uncertain. So it takes a kind of supreme optimism or commitment or maybe even naivete to do it. Not sure about the naive part, but Pete Ashdown has become remarkably successful as a high-tech entrepreneur through optimism and commitment to a cause. You get the sense that his company, the internet service provider X-Mission, is more than a business to Pete Ashdown. Today in the program, we are beginning a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office, and we're starting with Pete Ashdown, talking about his ideas for politics, business, life, and his chances being a Democrat in Utah. We invite you to join us. 585 West is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Pete Ashdown is Utah's Democratic candidate running against incumbent Orrin Hatch for the U.S. Senate. Pete Ashdown was raised in Bountiful. He attended the University of Utah in 1993. He started the Salt Lake City-based internet provider X-Mission. He's the father of three, and this is his first run for public office. And Pete Ashdown, did I get that right? And welcome.
It sounds great. Thank you, Doug.
Well, one of the words that is often used to describe you is tenacious. And I wondered where that came from. That is this a personal trait? Is it a family trait? Is it something that came in some ways from your upbringing, do you think?
I would side with the idea that it's more of a genetic trait. Huh. You know, I come from a long line of people who weren't satisfied with the current situation and made extreme sacrifices to change that. I, of course, trace my lineage back to the people that settled Utah, but I also trace it back to the people that settled Plymouth Rock. And on my mother's side, I mean, she was a great example of that, too. She left Denmark alone by herself and came to Utah to find a better life after the war. And that kind of sacrifice, that kind of looking towards the future to make life better for not only yourself but your descendants, I think is inherent in my family.
I wonder how you describe the values of your upbringing. I mean, you were raised in Davis County by a collection of devoted Democrats, which is unusual, we should say, not entirely unique, but interesting.
Yeah.
And I noticed this kind of mixture in your family of, you know, blue-collar sensibilities along with education, along with a business. How do you describe the values that you were raised with?
My parents certainly instilled me with a number of moral values, but they also put education at a very premium, a very important part of all of the children in my family's lives. They were very adamant about us choosing our own path. They never, you know, certainly there were times when I spent 12 hours a day on the computer and my mother wondered what direction it was going in. She wanted me to get out and see some sunlight every now and then, but they were committed to us making our own decisions and us and everyone in the family finding their own path. And what even more acutely now that my mother's gone and my father remains is the incredible support that my father continues to give me in this race. He is my biggest cheerleader, and he's not discouraged by anything, which is a remarkable inspiration. And I think it's a great thing to have parents like that.
So did your folks, your mom or your dad, did they have, you know, sayings that they passed along to you? That is to say, you know, this certain thing is expected of you, Pete, or what did they just wanted for you, what you wanted for yourself, and they helped you sort of find that? Or was there a level of expectation that you have to live up to something? Did you get that from them?
I think there was an expectation that we had to do something with our lives,
yeah,
other than just hang around. You know, it's funny you say sayings. I think what I get more from my father are euphemisms, which 5 years ago I started collecting every time they come out of his mouth. And, you know, my dad was born in 1925 in Bountiful, Utah, when the population was 2,000. So he has these sayings like, you know, it fits like socks on a turkey, or it's rarer than hen's teeth. My brothers and my sisters and I just kind of chuckle when these come around. But that's what I get from him more than anything. I mean, they certainly were an inspiration as far as being committed to work, being committed to a goal. They taught us the value of hard work, and picking raspberries in our garden, or helping unload freight from Finland for the family business. I mean, there was always something to do, but it was also a great life to grow up in. I mean, it was a very wild, Bountiful was much more wild in my time than it is today. I remember pheasants and foxes and even moose, of course, deer all the time walking through the yard, and then being able to just go out and go hiking and go camping in your backyard was also a great experience.
Is it fair to say that you have always had an eye for the different, or I'll even say the strange? Have you always sort of had an eye for that? I mean, I'm wondering what kind of a people watcher you are, and if you like the unique, and I'm wondering what that says about you, that you root for the underdog, for example, or that you're reacting to this notion of conformity, for example.
I think I'm committed to finding the cutting edge, whether it be in music or whether it be in technology. I'm always kind of looking beyond the horizon to see what's next and trying to visualize what that can be. I remember as a kid being utterly fascinated by Disneyland's Futureland. I mean, that was what inspired a lot in me, and I was also utterly fascinated by the moon missions, the Apollo missions, running home from kindergarten every day to watch them on the evening news. Those were great inspirations to me in the sense that I was seeing a really bright future. I was seeing a future that included going to the stars, going to the planets, and a future that included easier ways to live our lives and make opportunity available to everybody. And so I've always been that eternal optimist in that, you know, no matter how bad things get, I think there are great opportunities on the horizon for everybody.
Was there ever, though, growing up as you did in Davis County, which I expect would be like growing up in any place where there's a predominant kind of point of view, did you ever find yourself kind of resisting it or reacting to it? Or did you ever tell yourself, I'm going to dust my feet off this small pop stand and see the world? I mean, how are you thinking about life in Davis County?
You know, I wouldn't say ideology was a predominant part of living in Davis County, and I think it's a unique experience that I had. I've talked to other people from my high school, and they reflect on the fact that there wasn't a lot of bitter cliquishness in the high school. I mean, the jocks hung out with the band geeks, and the cowboys hang out with the rockers, and I mean, it was just everybody was good friends for the most part. And I think that was unique because I've talked to so many people who have had such a horrible experience in high school that they look up on it with absolute dread. Now, that's not to say that I didn't think about, you know, I'm going to get out of Utah as soon as I can. I did think about that in high school. As soon as I graduate, I'm going to go to an out-of-state university and see what else is out there. I didn't go to an out-of-state university. I went to the University of Utah, but I did an extreme amount of travel. I traveled all over the world and and have seen many cities, and part of my passion was music, so I would go to these concerts elsewhere, and I always came back to Utah with a sigh of relief, and especially in starting my business here and raising a family here, I have really come to realize how special Utah is on the global scale of things, how it is easy to get things done here. It's easy to affect change. And, you know, on the practical level, it's easy to get a seat at a theater, or a, you don't have to have a reservation for a restaurant. You just walk on in. And we have such the ability to travel that it's nice to have a home that you feel good about and easy to go someplace else if you want to.
What do you think it is in your life that says the most about who you are? I mean, I'm thinking about this lair of yours in Salt Lake City, the Pleasure Palace. But I'm also thinking about music. I mean, which of those things, if it is a thing, says the most about who you are?
I think my business and the way I have run my business. I didn't come from it from an MBA background. I came to it from a entrepreneurial sweat equity, do things on your own. If you don't have the money, you've got to stay up late kind of background. And my philosophy in running my business was that I wanted to run a service that I would feel comfortable purchasing as a subscriber. And I also came from a corporate environment, although I enjoyed my years at Evans and Sutherland, which was the corporation I worked for. I also worked for IHC for some time, too. I knew what I didn't like about those corporate environments. I knew that having a good environment for employees to work in was the most important thing you can give them. That if they're miserable, they're not going to be doing a good job. If they're worried about their health insurance, they're not going to be doing a good job. And so I've tried to craft an environment for them that they are able to grow and flourish in. Now, in some cases, that's too much rope. I mean, some people have hung themselves with that rope. And but in other cases, I've had people who have been with X Mission for over a decade, and that's unheard of in the tech industry. And then my philosophy towards giving back to the community. You know, we laud Bill Gates and others for setting up these foundations after they've made their money. From day one, I said, you know, if you're a nonprofit in Utah, you can come to X Mission, and I'll give you service for free.
Did you lay out, Pete? I'm wondering, you know, how a lot of people, when they start their businesses, they sort of lay out whether they write it down or not, but they have it in their mind, a kind of, not a business plan, but kind of a vision, which speaks more to just the bottom line, but what it is they want from this business. It seems like you have that kind of philosophy.
Yeah, well, I think the brass tacks was laid out on paper. I had to do a business plan that showed me making money eventually.
Sure.
But as far as the philosophy, no, it was more in my head. And I have to admit that in leaving my business full-time to work on this campaign, there has been a little bit of chagrin inside the company because Pete's not around anymore to steer the ship. I am confident in the people who are running X Mission that they continue on my vision. And I think I'm confident in their support of my efforts in this campaign. But it was something where it was all in my head, and people would come to me and say, well, what do you think about this? What do you think about this decision? You know, should we go this direction or this direction? And it really didn't take long for me to come up with an answer for that.
So business has to make money first. That's clear. But it has to do what secondly? It has to be, it seems like, humane?
Well, there was a New York Times article recently about how compassionate conservatism has failed this country. But what is coming to the fore in its place was compassionate capitalism. That a number of big companies are starting to take notice that if you go out and have a philosophy of doing good and giving back to the community and not putting profit as the number one motivator in your business, that profit seems to take care of itself. And people recognize the fact that you are contributing to the greater good in society and want to support your business as a result. The best form of advertising my business has had is word of mouth. It's people telling people. And I have heard so many times people coming back and saying, because you support this nonprofit or this organization in my community, I'm going to support you. And it's a thing that has been, I feel very deeply indebted to Utah for, in that they have built my business, and it has guided my philosophy as far as the future of its business, of X Mission. People say, well, what's your exit strategy? How are you going to get out? I don't have an exit strategy. My exit strategy doesn't exist. My strategy is to continue to serve the community in the best way I can. And I have had offers to sell. I've had very good offers to sell that would have benefited me in the short term greatly, but they would have been disastrous for my customers, my employees, and my community, and so I turned them down.
Pete Ashdown is with us. He is running for Senate against Utah Republican Orrin Hatch. We invite you to join us at 585 West, 585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning a series of conversations with some of the candidates running for office this year. We're starting with high-tech entrepreneur Pete Ashdown. For any Democrat in Utah, it's an audacious ambition to aspire to a statewide office. It's another thing entirely to want to unseat Utah's senior senator, Orrin Hatch. Pete Ashdown, however, is full of energy and ideas for capturing grassroots support, and he's profoundly optimistic about his chances. We invite you to join us. 585 West is the number, 585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. So it sounds like to me, if you were pecking away at a computer when you were a kid, even before computers were sort of mainstream technologies, that you've always had an affinity for technology. What was it that you found appealing about it, that you saw something bigger in it? You saw potential for, or was it just you liked the games for a while? I mean, be honest.
Well, my parents tell the story of me going to some downtown department store when I was 2 or 3 years old and seeing this device that had buttons and wheels and a little telephone on the side. It was about as close to a computer as you could get in the 60s or early 70s. And I screamed until I got it. And it was like, not only did I scream in the store, I screamed on the trip home to Bountiful. My dad drove back to Salt Lake to get this thing for me, which I continued to play with until I beat it into the ground and it wasn't usable anymore. And then my dad built the follow-up to that, which was kind of a turntable with lights that blinked on and off, and you could control the whole thing. And it still sits in my father's house to this day. But I've always been engaged by computer graphics and the visuals that come with computers. And when video games came on the scene, that was tremendous for me. And I have fond memories of my early youth going to Smith's grocery store to play the video games that were available. And I even forced my parents into a pilgrimage out to Atari, where, much to my dismay, I found that they didn't have a tour. And so I went around the campus peering in the windows, seeing what I could see on the inside. So getting a personal computer, in this case it was an Apple II, was the next logical step. And my mother, again, relented after my constant begging and my pushing that it could be used for the family business, which in fact she didn't do much of with it on the computer. But I took off from there, and I discovered communications, modem communications at the time, bulletin board systems, and when I graduated to my next computer, which was an Amiga, I got onto a version of the Internet at the time in 1987, and that's when I started to really see the power of communication.
I want to ask about politics, party politics in particular. Did you get your politics from your parents? Again, Democrats in amidst of Davis County Republicans, because it seems like in some ways, I think you've alluded to this in interviews in the past, yeah, that you were somewhat reluctant as a Democrat. You didn't necessarily see yourself fitting in there.
I've always tried to stand more as an independent thinker, not go with the flow, in to speak, and party politics, for a large part, is going with the flow. And however, my political awareness, when I was growing up in Bountiful, I started to notice that we were the only Democrats around. And I asked my mother, why in the world are you a Democrat? And she went to the shelf and pulled down an autobiography of Hugh B. Brown, the LDS apostle, who stated, I am a Democrat because they're kinder to the poor. Now, when I was considering running for this office, I deeply weighed the benefits of being a part of a party. And I realized that it's hard to win as a Democrat in Utah, but it's even harder to win as an independent. And I find the Democratic Party's ideals are more closely associated with mine, in that I believe, as Hubie Brown did, that the Democratic Party puts the individual at the top of the pyramid. And the Republican Party puts business at the top of the pyramid, expecting business to take care of the individual. And I personally believe that that would be a great model if businesses were responsible and thought in the broad sense of the community, but more often than not, their interests are very, very narrow, and we see the results of that today. So I do believe that the Democratic Party has a lot of work to be done, and I am positioning myself as a leader of the Democratic Party rather than a follower. I have no ties with the people in Washington now. I am getting no money from the people in Washington now, or any of the other prominent Democrats around this country. In fact, have been ignorant of this race to the point of being rude. But I believe that's a great opportunity for Utah, in that the vision I am putting forward for the Democratic Party is a Utah vision, and having that kind of clout is a great thing to replace Senator Hatch's seniority.
585-WEST is the number to join us, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Let's take a few calls here. John is joining us now from Salt Lake. John, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a quick question. I don't mean this unkindly, but it seems to me that this is a race that is the height of fighting windmills, if you will. I'd like to know how you think it can be anything except just a big waste of your own personal family's resources and time, plus those of people who donate to your cause?
It's a good question.
It is.
Democrats get this question all the time, and you are a man who has a young family. How do you respond to it? Why are you doing it in that way?
One of the principles I laid down at the beginning was that I was not going to put my company's finances or my family's finances in risk to do this. I want people to know that their contributions are a necessary part of this campaign, but I am trying to lay down a path for people to run for office if they so choose, not whether they have $1 million in the bank. I think money is the root of all evil in American politics, and I would like to see change in that area, and I believe change can come because I have seen it happen in my own business. I have seen entities like Google and eBay and Yahoo and now MySpace and YouTube rise to a level of subscription and attention without any traditional advertising at all. And I think we have seen traditional advertising run its course for the 50 years that it's really been in existence in America. And there are back doors into politics that haven't been exploited yet. And these are backdoors that I'm trying to demonstrate. I believe that personal networking is, as I've learned in my own business, is a far more effective form of advertising than seeing it on the television.
Huh.
As I stated earlier, my business got to the point it is mostly on word of mouth alone. And these other businesses got to the point that they got to, mostly on word of mouth and networking over the internet, person-to-person recommendation.
So this is all intangible, but I mean, it's hard to measure this, but you're a firm believer in that, and in that sense...
And it takes somebody to demonstrate it. It takes somebody to shift the paradigm before everyone else takes notice and says, wow, I can run for office. What we have in Washington right now is a representation that's made up of very wealthy people, ex-attorneys, big businessmen, and I would like to see a representation that is of more indicative of America. You know, school teachers, housewives, servicemen, first responders, small businessmen. And I think the only way that can be done is demonstrating a path to gaining elected office that circumvents the need for millions of dollars.
John, glad you called. Thanks very much. 585 West is the number, 585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Aaron is joining us on the line from West Jordan, Utah. Aaron, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for letting me be on your show.
Sure.
I was just wanting to find out from him if he had ever been made a comparison, actually, that I guess Orrin Hatch originally was a Pennsylvanian and has not really essentially been a Utahn, but you know, he came here to upset the incumbent and told him, you know, that the incumbent's been in there too long, and essentially that's how he got his position. I think, you know, that Pete Ashdown's in the same framework, and I think this is a great race. Has anyone made that comparison to you, Mr. Ashdown?
Yeah. In fact, the one thing that most people tell me when I meet them is, do you know what Orrin Hatch ran on in 1976? Was that what do you call a senator who's been in Washington for 18 years? You call him home. And I have heard that from everyone. So people who are around in 76 remember what he ran on. I tend to think that, you know, it's something I can bring up, but it's not a focus of this campaign. What I am trying to focus on this campaign are new ideas, new issues, the ideal that democracy comes through communication with the people, that openness and transparency is essential to good accountability and good government in Washington. And I also believe, I'm a strong believer in the protection of freedom and liberty through the Constitution.
Glad you called. Thanks very much, Aaron. 585 West, again, the number. Matt sends this email. He writes, although I never really knew Pete while living in his neighborhood, I got to know his family through home teaching visits to his father. To this day, Matt writes, I will still take my son trick-or-treating at his parents' house for the well-known donuts that are given out. While I am a conservative and my views differ from his, I find it refreshing to see a candidate willing to take a chance against embedded politics. In today's political landscape, it's always good to see a new face willing to make their home a better place. 585 West, again the number, 585-93. He gives out donuts still every year?
Yeah, that's a family tradition. There are these heart attack-inducing deep-fried donuts that have been become famous, somewhat, and bountiful for...
the Spud Nut.
For Halloween.
And, that's right.
My dad still makes them to this day, and they're great.
Matt, thanks. 585 West, again the number. Dave is with us in Salt Lake. Dave, welcome.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thanks.
All right. I just wanted to know, Mr. Ashdown mentioned protection through the Constitution and constitutional rights. How does he feel about guns and gun control?
This is an interesting issue, Pete Ashdown. I wanted to take this up, too. And thanks, Dave, by the way. This is one of these issues where you've somewhat changed your views based on the information you've been collecting on your website, where you're asking for a sort of a collaborative process.
You're right, Doug. When I started, I was more of a, you know, gun control seems to be reasonable to me kind of situation. But as I talked to people who were more familiar with the gun laws than I am, they talked about how it's really punishing the innocent in most cases, that criminals don't care whether there's a law that restricts your access to a gun. They're going to get it any way they can. So one of the things that has bothered me about legislation is the ideal of punishing the innocent, that if you're a law-abiding citizen, that the government is going to come in and make you jump through hoops anyway. I don't think that is fair to people who do respect the law. So I believe that the Second Amendment does allow people to bear arms if they so choose. You know, there's some debate over whether the militia is a part of that or not, but I believe it's the individual. I believe that the Constitution should be interpreted as broadly as possible.
This is the libertarian in you speaking, is it?
Yeah, and it's funny because you mentioned that because my experience with politics is not limited to this race. I have done a fair amount of lobbying on the Hill, and There were some people on the Hill who were a little bit surprised that I declared myself as a Democrat because they pegged me more as a libertarian. And I think that there is a libertarian streak coming out in the Democratic Party, especially in the West, especially with people like Brian Schweitzer, which are saying, you know what, if it's none of your business, it's none of your business. A small government should stay out of people's individual lives.
You apply this to moral issues as well, Brian.
I do. And if there isn't a minor involved, or there is somebody who has not given consent, then I believe that the government should stay out of that question. And I think that that's, you know, to a lot of people in Utah, that's a hard thing to accept. But when I talk about it in the frame of the Constitution, liberty is not how I define my own freedoms. It's how I define the freedoms of others who I disagree with. And that, I believe, is what fundamental to what America is about.
585 West is the number to join us. Dave, again, thanks. 585-9378. Let's see. Tammy is with us calling from Salt Lake. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much. Pete, I had the privilege to work in your booth, volunteering your booth at the Utah State Fair.
Oh, thank you, Tammy.
And I wanted to let you know that we had two primary types of people that stopped by. The ones that said, he's running against Orrin Hatch, oh, tell me more, you know, and sign me up. And then the others who said, Orrin Hatch, well, you know, he's my savior, I can't vote against him. How are you going to address those people who seem to have such blind faith in Orrin Hatch? And what kind of issues are you going to point out that they really need to look at when they go to make an informed decision when they go to vote this time? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Great. Glad. Tammy, thanks. Well, it's an important question. I mean, how are you going to appeal to, the sort of mainstream Utahn living in the suburbs whose views tend to be candidly conservative, who tend to have voted for Orrin Hatch over the years? What is the case you're making to them?
One of the reasons I got involved was concern for my children's future in America, concern with the debt that they are being shackled with. And I think the Republican Party has strayed so far from the Republican Party of Eisenhower that it's not holding up a number of conservative ideals. First and foremost, the ideal of small government. Secondly, fiscal responsibility. And Senator Hatch in 76, when he was running, made the pledge that he would, if he was unable to curtail spending and balance budgets, that he would resign. Now, I realize campaign promises are cheap, but I believe that that is a big part of conservatism, is balancing those budgets. I also argue that Senator Hatch has not shown a lot of discretion when it comes to keeping his mouth shut in regards to Osama bin Laden. Immediately following 9/11, he revealed that we were monitoring Osama bin Laden's satellite phone to the Associated Press. And, of course, shortly after, Osama bin Laden stopped using that satellite phone. That doesn't show very good judgment to me. And I have had employees that have made mistakes like that, and I fired them. And I think it's time for people to take a good look at what Senator Hatch has done in his past term.
585 West, again, the number to join us, 585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. One of the promises you've made to voters is that you're going to collaborate with them. And as we just mentioned, one of these unique ways is by allowing people to help you draft these position statements online. And I'm wondering I guess guns is one of those areas where you've changed your mind. Iraq, your position on Iraq, has that been altered somehow?
Yeah, it has. In that, I think the biggest problem with Iraq is the debate's not moving forward. You have each side at their own 20-yard line with the ball in the center of the field, and nobody's going out to grab the ball. It's like, we want the ball over here in a withdrawal, immediate withdrawal, or a timetable for withdrawal, or we want to stay the course over here, and nobody's pushing this debate forward. And what bothered me is that it seemed like there were no other solutions to that. So I threw the question out on my website. I said, what do you think, Utah and America? And an anonymous American came forward and said, what we ought to do in Iraq is ask the Iraqi people. They deal with this every day. They're the best experts of what they need for their security. They're the best experts as to whether the American presence is wanted or not. And we're over there pushing democracy. and we should put democracy to the test and make them make a decision on this. If they want us to stay, fine. We can stay. We can help them with their security. I think there should be a cost associated with doing that. If they want us to leave, we should respect that. But what that position does is moves the ball forward. It moves the debate forward. And I have to tell you, Doug, I went to Washington this past week, and I talked to Democrats about this. I also talked to Democrats about openness and transparency in their offices. There's been a lot of stomping around by the Democrats saying, this is a Republican problem, Abramoff and so forth. And yet there's been no leadership inside the Democratic Party that said, we're going to do things differently. We're going to go back and we're going to open our offices for people to see what we do and hold us accountable. And I challenged them to do that. And what I got back, sadly enough, were excuses. I think there's a vacuum of leadership inside the Democratic Party that needs to change, and I hope to fill that vacuum.
You may have responded to this, but let me read this that comes from Brad. He writes, in political terms, the sides in the war are narrow to either cut and run or stay the course, as you mentioned. Naturally, it isn't that simple. Can you change this soundbite debate to a discussion of specific plans of action? I guess you were sort of getting to that. But Brad also writes this about the war on terror. He says, waging a war against terror in which we try to kill or incarcerate all the terrorists seems to be a war doomed to failure. Wouldn't it be more logical to make terrorists unimportant? One way, he writes, to do this would be to reduce our dependence on oil and thereby reduce our presence in nations where terrorism is brewing.
I agree. I think one of the strongest messages we can send to Iran is to stop buying their oil and to have our allies stop buying their oil. We are indirectly financing Hezbollah through Iranian oil purchases. And we need to have the courage to stand up and say, we are not going to support these regimes that do this kind of thing. And the best thing we can do to fight terrorism on a global basis is global unity.
585 West, the number to join us, 585-9378. Pete Ashdown is with us. He's running for Senate against Utah Senator Orrin Hatch. 585 West, the number, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We should mention we've also invited Senator Hatch to join us on the program at a later date. We'll let you know when that happens. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today we are beginning a series of conversations speaking with some of the candidates running for office this year. Pete Ashdown, the Democrat running for Senate against Utah incumbent Orrin Hatch, is with us today. 585 West is the number, 585-9378. Our email address is radiowest@kuer.org. Nathan sends this from Lehigh. He writes, I'm a lifelong Republican and a conservative. I've been very disillusioned by Senator Orrin Hatch, especially his questioning of Judge Roberts and Judge Alito during the confirmation hearings. I'm also very disillusioned by the Bush administration, Nathan writes. I continue to do research, but Mr. Ashdown may very well have my vote this fall. Sam writes this from Bountiful. I can't believe how much I agree with Pete Ashdown. I'm a 23-year-old Bountiful resident. I'm working in various businesses I have over the years. I'm pleased to hear his theory on business and its role. I just barely got a job for the first time with health insurance, and my wife works at a place that is medically related, that is mid to high skilled, that doesn't offer health insurance and the pay isn't as good as many fast food places. How do you feel about living wages, and what about the minimum wage?
When I started hiring employees with X Mission in 1995, I set the entry-level wage at $7 an hour with benefits. And I did that because I was making less than that in my prior job, and I realized how hard it was even for a single student to get by. Since then, the entry-level wage has gone up to $11 an hour with benefits, and I realized that a lot of starting businesses can't afford to do things like that, but what I am more concerned with are the ones who can and refuse to, the ones who don't stand up to their responsibilities of taking care of their employees. I think the Costco versus Walmart comparison is apt here, and that Costco does take care of their employees, and their employees love working there, and Walmart is always under question for not doing that. I believe that the minimum wage should be increased. I believe it should be increased significantly, and that the businesses who are able to pay the minimum wage because they are making enough money to do so should do so. Otherwise, they're shoving off that responsibility to the taxpayer and social services.
But this doesn't rankle your libertarian sensibilities, again, the government getting involved and telling a business how much to pay its employee?
Well, libertarianism is centered on personal responsibility. And if a business is not going to uphold that responsibility, I think they should be held accountable.
585 West, again, the number to join us. Jim Mem is with us calling from Salt Lake. Welcome.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sure.
How's it going, Pete?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, I just had a question. How do you respond to this notion or accusation I think I read in the Salt Lake Tribune about you using your internet business to promote your campaign? Is that something that only you can do because you have this great internet business?
What I have done in using my internet services is I have declared everything as an in-kind donation from my own company. So I have done the right thing there. And I also should note that when it comes to donations, it's not only nonprofits that I support. It's any candidate who is running for office, regardless of their party. If a candidate wants to come and get a website on X Mission for the duration of the campaign, I will give it to them for the duration of that campaign because I believe that communication and free speech is an essential part of leveling the playing field in politics.
Jim, ma'am, glad you called. Thanks. 585 West, again, the number 585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Where are you on immigration? Your views have been described as pretty tough. I think for a Democrat.
I think we need to reform the legal immigration system. We have unrealistic limits inside that immigration system and a much higher demand for workers and students here that don't fit those limits, and therefore people are pushed into the illegal arena. But once that immigration system is reformed, once our borders are secured, which I believe is also essential to this country's security.
A long fence? You agree with
no,
that?
No, I don't like the idea of a fence because I think it's kind of Rube Goldberg. I think using the Department of Defense's technology to monitor the border is a good start, predator drones and so forth, empowering our National Guard to actually take action on the border if needed to be.
Would you send illegals home?
If they come across the border, yeah, I would. I would. I think, though, that we need to have, you know, the ideas of a wide fence and a large gate, you know, having the ability for people to come here and be law-abiding citizens, to live the American dream, is an essential part of America. But they should do it legally. Now, there was a couple that in Green River that was deported earlier this year because they tried to go through the legal immigration system and it failed them. They were law-abiding. They were contributing to their society, contributing to their community, and they were sent home. And I think that's a good example of how broken the system is. Once the system is fixed, I believe employers should be held accountable. That part of reducing the motivations for people to come here is holding employers accountable to pay living wages, take care of their employees, and only hire people who have legal residency.
Sounds like you're aligned in some ways with the Bush administration's ideas for immigration.
Well, I don't necessarily like the idea of a guest worker program. I think we have a guest worker program, and it just needs to be expanded properly to deal with the demand.
585 West is the number, 585-9378. Scott is with us, calling from Salt Lake City. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Doug.
Sure.
My question is that there seems to be a difference in the Republicans and Democrats. The Democrats, this is a generalization, tend to be more factually based in their decisions, and the Republican Party seems to be more faith-based. And I'm wondering how your guest is going to swing some of those faith-based votes over to his side.
This has been a long-held dilemma in well, not just in Utah politics, in national politics particularly, but in Utah, those questions are the moral questions, thinking voters sort of de facto votes for Republicans, given that their sense that it's sort of the moral vote, the moral high ground.
Yeah.
How are you going to combat that?
You know, to be frank, I don't know if I can. I can't compete with God when it comes to changing somebody's mind. And if somebody believes that the Republican Party is ordained by God, there's not a lot of arguing with them. What I try and do is express my positions in the fact that I am a native Utahn, I'm a small businessman, I'm a family man, and I am concerned about the same things they are. And I want to see change in Washington that is directed towards the American people. What he said about Republicans being one way and Democrats being another, you know, I think that is a generalization. I think that everyone should have a seat at the table. I think our greatest leaders like Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy were smart in that they gave the opposition a seat at the table and they took advice from the opposition party, that all Americans were included in the process. I think what is exciting about what is happening in my campaign and what the future of politics hold is that with the internet and communication, we have the ability to expand democracy exponentially and everyone can be part of the process.
585 West, again, the number to join us. Thanks for the call. 585-9378. Let's see. Courtney, welcome. Calling from Ogden. Hi.
Hi. I was just wondering what your view on school vouchers was.
The thing I have a biggest problem with school vouchers on is that if the government is to give money to private entities for education, it needs to be non-discriminatory. Now, most people don't have an argument with in Utah with money going to a organization like the Catholic Church or a Mormon Academy or something that they're familiar with. But when you get an extremist in there that says, I'm going to set up a school for name your extreme religion here, then I have a problem with them getting money for that situation. And again, the government needs to be non-discriminatory, and I think they should stay out of that. I think there is merit in private schools. I think there is merit in good competition, but I would like to see full funding for public schools before we even start talking about how we can start stripping funding out of that.
Lorraine sends this email. She writes, what do you think of a program to incrementally raise gasoline taxes at the pump to encourage motorists to use less gasoline? Orrin Hatch in a letter said that this is a good idea, but the economy is not strong enough to support higher gas taxes. Other economists have said that that's not true. How do you respond to that?
You know, I would side, sadly, with Senator Hatch on a lot of that because I've talked to the farmers who are paying the high gas prices now to do the work that they need to do before their income comes in, and it's very hard for them to get over that hump. The high gas prices are also affecting transportation of goods and services. So I think that it's very dangerous to try and increase that beyond the ridiculous high prices that we're already paying. Where I don't agree with Senator Hatch is that we have incredible opportunity in this state for alternative fuels. Solar, wind, geothermal, biomass. I run my own campaign bus on biodiesel, and yet we are doing nothing to encourage that in this state. And I think the governor should take a lead on this, and I think our Washington representation should take a lead on this. But what our Washington representation does more often than not and says, they say, we need to find more oil, and that's the spectrum of their energy concern.
Not much time left. Let me ask you this. How has being a candidate changed you, do you think? Has it tempered your sense of enthusiasm? You know, it often changes people. It often, you know, you get consultants who say, you know, let's fine-tune this, let's update that. How's it changed you, do you think?
Most of my life was spent as an introvert behind a computer screen and bending myself into that extrovert that my wife so much desires has been a journey for me. Paul Van Damme told me when he was running that if you run for office, it will make you a better person. And I didn't understand what he meant by that until I actually did it. And I recommend it to everyone. I you know, stand up and do it, and I will help you. And because it is a remarkable thing to do, not only in the vistas I have seen in this beautiful state, but the fantastic people who I have met over the past 18 months that have told me their stories and told me their concerns. I love Utah more than ever now.
Pete Ashdown. Pete, thanks.
Thank you.
And we should mention we've invited Pete Ashdown's opponent, incumbent Senator Orrin Hatch, to join us, and we'll give you an update as soon as we hear about that. In the meantime, Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Mike Anderson, produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.